Gensel, self pass, has it now in the circle. Up high, Letang, a blast, stop, rebound, score! Sidney Crosby! It's curtains for the Caps. OT winner for the black and gold.
Lindblom outlets and now behind the defense. Konechny's going to catch up to it. He walks right in. Backhand. He scores! Travis Konechny with his fourth goal of the year.
Back to the point again. Shabbat gets to the front. Dadnoff heals the puck. Norris with a shot. Knocked down. Second chance. Bouncing puck. They score! Tipped in front.
Well, we'll have to wait for the official call here. The way Josh Norris looked to the skies here, Dean, it might be his as well. First ever in the National Hockey League.
TSN 1200.
Yeah, indeed it was. And that whole line was fantastic for the Sens last night. Norris, Batherson, Tkachuk, all dominated, 20 shots in total. Josh Norris' first NHL goal. Unfortunately, ends up coming in a losing cause as they fall 4-3 in overtime to the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and as I say, JR, normally a Caps loss to the Penguins would hurt, but they've won a cup, and that's pretty cool yesterday. The 5-on-3 goal by the Penguins, that's a rarity to see.
Yeah, shorthanded goal against Teddy Bluger. Yeah. Ended up getting that. That man who actually called that game joins us right now, as we do each and every weekday morning at this time. We are pleased to be joined by Pierre McGuire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, have I done something? Hang on here. Let me do this and this and and that, and I might cut him off. I'm not sure what's going on here. And now we're going to try with Pierre. Are you there? Okay, this is a disaster. Okay, so we had problems with Hammer's phone line.
Yeah.
And now we may have to be, maybe it's my phone as well, because he did something to his own phone. Maybe not need to fix my phone. We're going to try again. Pierre's probably going to be angry about the entire thing. In the meantime, let's fill, as the experts are doing this sort of thing. Yeah. So for those that may be joining us this morning, Simmer, your thoughts overall on last night's game for the Sens?
Well, as you said, the whole Norris to Batherson, Tkachuk, figure out a nickname for them. My gosh, it was just a treat to watch. I mean, just refreshing the entire game. Overall effort. I just kept looking at the shot clock and thinking, wow, they are thoroughly outplaying the Winnipeg Jets, and the driving force is that young line right there. So that was my takeaway on it. And of course, you had the collapse, but like I said, it didn't feel like a meltdown. And maybe based on expectations, JR, also didn't feel like any gut punch. It was just more kind of, you know, a little bit head scratching on some of the coaching decisions.
All right. Sorry, what do you want me to do, Matt? Okay. All right. Matt's going to turn him on here, and we'll see if Pierre, are you there?
Get those gremlins, JR.
Okay, get them. Shoot, I got my gun out, Pierre. I'm going to take care of them.
Hey, yeah. Good morning to you. Good morning to Sean. Good morning to the listeners. You know, you talked about that 5-on-3 goal, Washington-Pittsburgh. We'll start them before we get to the Ottawa-Winnipeg game. Mm-hmm. But I was working that game, and that was a TSN turning point. Washington calls a timeout. Not kidding you. They go on a 5-on-3. Blaine Forsythe has the dry erase board. He's drawn up all kinds of plays for the Capitals in a 5-on-3. Casey DeSmith, who has not had a great night, all of a sudden gets the puck, catches a harmless shoot-in by the Capitals in a 5-on-3, catches the puck, puts it down. The puck's on edge. He launches it so it gives him more launch up in the air because the puck's on edge. Aerials the puck right onto the stick of Teddy Bluger, and he goes in and scores. It was the turning point of the game. It was unbelievable when you really look at it. The timeout, the 5-on-3, the aerial pass by a goalie who's having a tough night, and then a fourth-line player who's a really useful player scores a spectacular highlight reel goal. Anyways, that was an interesting part of that game.
And surprise, surprise, Sidney Crosby ends up getting the game-winning goal in overtime. You mentioned Casey DeSmith, so he started his second straight game. Tristan Jarry has not been very good to start the season. And you mentioned that DeSmith was not that great last night, even though Pittsburgh won the game. Yeah. Should there be concern in Pittsburgh about the state of their goaltending?
I think eventually it'll sort itself out. I really do. I mean, Casey's a good goalie. He did not play great on a couple goals in particular. One was a Tom Wilson goal that hit him up high, and he didn't corral it very well. And another one was a shoddy rebound off a really lame shot from the outside that he kicked into the slot that eventually ends up at the back of the net. So he's going to have to get better there. But I thought in the third period when it mattered most, he was on his game. I think with Tristan Jarry, they just want to reset him. And Mike Buckley's a goalie coach there, and I think he probably will reset him pretty quick.
I won't say star, but boy, oh boy, is it incredible to watch a guy like Tom Wilson and how he's evolved over the years, Pierre, and how capable of a player he is now?
I will say star. He's an unbelievably capable player, and the guy that deserves a lot of credit for, and I'm sure Tom would tell you the same thing, is Barry Trotz. I remember early on in Barry Trotz's tenure, Tom Wilson was just a really young, robust, nasty player. I mean, his hits were just devastating. And I remember Barry Trotz telling him, we need you to stay out of the penalty box because we want to use you as a penalty killer. We see you as being a very, very good penalty killer. And eventually Tom figured it out. He's still an unbelievably hard hitter and maybe one of the most feared guys in the league when it comes to body checking. But his hand skills are great. His hockey decisions are really strong. He's reliable defensively. He's an elite penalty killer. He is a star player in the league. There's no question.
Because he has such a unique skill set, and when you get to the Olympics, you know, you have basically NHL rules. Is it crazy to mention him in that conversation?
Not at all. Okay. I don't think it's crazy at all to mention him. You know, again, I'll go back to the 2010 Olympics and Canada playing at home in Vancouver and the quarterfinal games against the Russians, and Mike Babcock and his coaching staff say, we need to go back to the physical game plan because they hadn't been a very physical team to that point. And he puts together a line of Mike Richards, Rick Nash, and Jonathan Toews. And if you go watch the tape of that game, watch the first three shifts that line's on the ice and watch what they do to the Russian defensemen, especially Sergei Gonchar. And that was it. The game was over. Canada just absolutely dominated and destroyed the Russians that game in the quarterfinal. And it was all because of the hitting presence, especially of Rick Nash and Mike Richards. So you look at it, a player like that is very, very useful in a situation like that.
All right, let's talk about the Ottawa-Winnipeg game. For Ottawa, there are much more positives than negatives, Pierre. They dominated mm-hmm. for most of the game. The top line made up of all the top prospects, and that mm-hmm. they dominated the game when they were out there. They ended up losing, though. But let's start with, from the positive point of view, of how dominant the Josh Norris, Tkachuk, Batherson line was last night.
Well, they were getting tons of shots on goal. They were dominating, I thought, in the faceoff circle, or really strong in the faceoff circle. But the biggest thing to me was just the way they attacked the game, and that was really positive. I was really encouraged to see that. So that's something that I know from the positive side they can take and say, you know, going forward, this is really good for us. I like the fact the power play had two goals. The Galchenyuk shot was a ripper. Riley put right into a sweet spot for him, so that was good news. You like to see more, and Braden Colburn's a very useful player. He's had a really nice career, but when he loses a one-on-one battle to Mason Appleton near the end of the first period, and eventually that goal gets credited to Adam Lowry, that's a battle. Those are those things that get magnified. You got to win that battle. You can't lose that puck battle right there, and the puck goes back to Neil Pionk, and it's a goal from Lowry on the deflection. So that's something, you know, you look at all the small little things that happen that cost the game for Ottawa. It's just little things that can get fixed. They're just little things that can get fixed.
Norris last night and Batherson so far is not just survival with the puck, Pierre. It's almost that little bit of cocky creativity. Mm-hmm. How much fun is that to watch, and how does that speak to kind of the confidence of those two young players?
Well, it shows you how important development is. It shows you how important the American Hockey League can be as long as players are developed properly. And it is a ton of fun to watch. It's awesome to watch. And you got to be very – we talk about it all the time, but the more and more you watch this team and the young players, the more excited you get. Now the stage is set where the coaching staff has to decide how much they're going to play the young players, especially at key times in games, because they're meriting the opportunity to play more and more as we go along here. I know it's early on in the season, but you can see just what Sean talked about. The confidence level of those young players is outstanding.
So that becomes, Pierre, then a talking point after the game was player usage. And DJ right. Smith in his post-game comments referred to young mistakes that were made. And yet if you look at the Ottawa Senator lineup from last night, outside of those three players at forward, the other nine guys, Pierre, are not young guys. They're all veteran players. They're on defense. There's not, I don't even, do you consider Shabbat to be a young player? Yeah, so, like, this is a team right now that there is playing veteran players. And so to say young mistakes, like, is he referencing something that I'm not picking up on when he's talking about young mistakes?
No, I just think it's about the team probably coming together. It's a young team. They're just coming together. You know, Dadonoff's a new player coming in. I think he's talking about that and the newness. Braden Colburn is a young player in their eyes because he hasn't been around this team. I think maybe that's what he was alluding to, but I'm not going to speak for him. I just, the one question I had, and again, it's, you know, you get the point, you move on, you got to play again. I didn't understand Anisimov being on the ice in overtime. I just didn't understand, especially against when you see Nick Ehlers. I mean, man, oh man, that's a tough matchup.
Maybe they feel with the way he trained that there's still upside in the player?
Just stop.
No, I know. But, no, Pierre, and again, sincerely, though, if you manage this team, if this continued along, where he's playing ahead of Colin White, who, first of all, I think White on his worst day is a better player, would you not just get rid of the guy?
Well, I asked the question, or we talked about it yesterday, and I said that's one of the things that has to happen, where the management has to come and speak and say, this is what we want to accomplish this season. Here are the guys we think can help us get there. We're going to start playing those players. And we're going eventually, not always, but in most situations, eventually what happens is the manager comes down and says, we're going to take away the coach's security blanket, so those older players are going to be moved on. That's usually, if the coach doesn't show that he wants to play the young players, usually the safety situations or the safety blankets get taken away, and then they just have the players that the general manager gives them. But that you're not at that point yet, but I think you're starting to get there.
Yeah, it's funny, Pierre, a lot of the reaction on the post-game show, a lot of reaction this morning, and again, it's early days. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but you know, a lot of fans are going, you know, this is reminding me a lot of Guy Boucher, over-reliance on veteran players. And when all of these guy older players or veteran guys were brought in the offseason, this was something that came up at the time. So this is not new, new talking point. This was, are they going to be relying on the older guys too much? And, you know, early in this season, you know, if it appears to be a tie goes to the vet, appears to be the case.
That's what it looks like right now. I would agree. It's early on, though, so I wouldn't overreact to it. But I liked how you started this segment. The truth of the matter is there were a lot of pauses in that game. The one thing, Sean, I wanted to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
Dadonov, they brought Dadonov in to be a scorer. He's got to get scoring. I mean, he's got to get into areas where he can score and start to really, I think, overwhelm the opposition. I haven't seen that part of his game yet, like I saw in Florida.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's actually looked a little smaller, but also I would say I don't think Stepanidze's strength is at that point he can provide it. So I wonder how you do that. I do think the touches will come on the power play, but hey, let's be honest, coming from playing with Huberdeau and Barkov, you don't have people feeding. You know, I mean, Barkov is a, what, top 10 center in the National Hockey League?
100%.
You know, Stepan right now on a normal team would be a third or fourth line guy.
That's what we talked about when they got him. Yeah. I mean, that's what he provides, leadership, depth, and penalty killing. That's what Derek Stepan's all about.
Alex Galchenyuk played his first game. You mentioned the goal, and it was a really nice goal. He was noticeable a lot to Pierre, but we've seen flashes from Galchenyuk, right? That's the criticism. You don't get it consistently. But based on what happened last night, not only does he maybe deserve to stay in the lineup, but maybe looking him as an option of a guy who could step into the middle and try him there.
That was his natural position coming out of junior, but the biggest thing is you got to give it more, not one game increments with him. That's always been the problem, and so we'll see if he's matured out of that. But last night that was a ripper. There's no question about it. He definitely has the offensive upside to do it, but it's about the effort level with consistency. That's a huge knock on him.
Would you have some curiosity at some point to see him either in the middle or he along with Stutzla and Dadonov as a line?
That's the other one I wanted to go. I'm curious to see long term what they're going to do and who they're going to play Stutzla with. But that would be that'd be intriguing. There's no question that would be intriguing.
Yeah, that was a big miss that we haven't spent a lot of time with Timmy Stutzla being out of the lineup. You know, the lack of a dynamic second option at the forward spot was readily apparent last night. Matt Murray ends up giving up the four goals. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not his best night. There weren't terrible goals, but do you think maybe they look at Hogberg to play in the game tomorrow night?
I don't know. I mean, depends on what's going on in practice. I really couldn't speak to that. The deflection by Lowry, that's a tough break. We talked about the faceoff situation. The Connor goal is a good goal. The Blake Wheeler, you know, tying goal late in the third, that's a deflection off a point shot. The Ehlers goal is off basically, you know, a breakaway type situation. Beautiful feed by Andrew Kopp. So I don't know how much you can blame the goalie, but I don't know. I'm not at practice. I can't really speak to what they're going to do. But I would go back with Matt Murray.
Yeah, my only critique on that, on the Connor goal, first of all, kind of back on his ass versus moving across. Mm-hmm. On that developing play in overtime, Pierre, just overall body of work, I think, is a bigger guy. First of all, he should be a little further out, give himself a chance. Mm-hmm. A little bit worried about the movement and also a little bit worried about the lack of confidence in his blocking and hand skills.
Well, we'll see how that plays out long term. You know, I don't know. I don't know exactly what Pierre Grew's plan is for him. But
Would you consider him to be an athletic guy?
No, what I consider him to be is just a really good goalie.
Okay.
There's some guys like Jonathan Quick's a
phenomenal
athlete.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
You know, there's some guys that are just super great athletes, and there are other guys that are just really good goalies. I consider him to be a really good goalie.
Yeah.
Hey, I know you got to run. Real quick on this, do you, the Pittsburgh having interest in Jack Roslovic out of Winnipeg, who's a, you know, unsigned RFA, does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Okay. They've got to find some wingers, top-end wingers. Now, I know they won last night, but they need some offensive dynamic-type wingers. Kasperi Kapanen played last night, by the way, and he played on a line that was centered by Teddy Bluger, and I thought that line was very effective. But I can't see Kasperi being a fourth line player there. Eventually, I got to think he's going to replace Evan Rodriguez on the top line with Gensel and Crosby. And if they do that, and then they can bring in Roslovic, that really changes the dynamic for the Penguins. It really does.
I hope not for a first round pick. They're playing the guy in the fourth line. See you later, Pierre.
Have a good one. Bye bye.
All right.
NBC's Pierre Maguire on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Automotive Group.
Happy New Year from the Myers Automotive Group. All 13 locations are open for sales and service. Book your appointment today. See Myers.ca for more. Myers wishes you and your family a Happy New Year. Throughout 2020, Myers followed all necessary safety protocols, and we're continuing this into the new year. All 13 Myers locations will be accepting same-day appointments for both sales and service. Call ahead to book an appointment, and we'll make sure you're taken care of. Looking to social distance? Check out our Buy From Home program, contactless drop-off, or Myers free pickup and delivery service. Myers, always here for you. Myers.ca.
Air Force Base, it's the opposite of it's the end of the world as I know it. The end, yeah, it feels like we're getting further away from the end of the world as of this morning on this U.S. Inauguration Day. Joe Biden will be sworn in at noon today in a ceremony you can watch, by the way, on CTV News, the CTV News channel. Their coverage starts at 9. The actual ceremony is at noon.
Yeah, half hour leaving, assuming first thing you want to change out is the bed. That's got to be such a strange transition. First of all, the excitement. Joe Biden's been in the White House a ton under, of course, Barack Obama. But, ability to switch over the house in a hurry, get it all cleaned up, and kind of your choice of decorating and furniture and all the different desks that you get an opportunity to use.
There you go. Anyway, and dogs. Hey, that's what I almost as a as a guy who owns a dog. Two dogs back in the White House, so I like that. Two big dogs too. They're not, you know, with all due respect to people who have small dogs.
You're about to disrespect them.
Okay. Purse dogs, Paris Hilton dogs, whatever, don't belong in the You need big dogs. It's a big house.
Poodles.
Nope, not poodles. Not even the sort of the bigger poodles, the ones that had the shaved legs, but sort of the bushy thing at the bottom there.
Echo's a golden doodle.
No.
Golden doodles are okay.
Oh, outstanding. Okay. What? What are you talking about?
I'm not a poodle
so
guy.
What's a JR acceptable breed of dog?
Just a big dog that's a dog.
A lab,
I don't need things that need to be shaved.
he grew up, they actually just shed around your house.
Exactly.
He grew up on Lassie and the Littlest Hobo.
Exactly.
So those are the two choices.
Those are dogs, okay? We don't need small dogs, okay? Anyway, good to see big dogs back in the White House as of today. Hey, 8:37, don't forget, a week from tomorrow, January 28th, is the annual Bell Let's Talk Day. We can all join in to help create positive change in our schools, communities, and workplaces. Visit bell.ca/letstalk. To learn more. That'll be, we'll talk more about that, of course, especially next week leading up to Bell Let's Talk Day, which is really, to be honest with you, kind of taking on a life of its own. And when you say that, it means it's sort of overstating it, but it has become so big now. And this year of all years, based on what everybody went through in 2020, it continues in 2021, is going to be a very big day next week.
I agree, Jaron. And not that, again, you have to, but I think for where the world has been at, a lot of people have been dealing with anxiety or different things that they never did before. Probably can relate a little bit better. And annually, hopefully it'll happen again. The very powerful message from our colleague Michael Landsberg when he comes on and just really explaining and having a chance to meet Michael and be around him, just to understand the effects of mental illness has had with him. And there's no solving this one. For him, he's lived with this his whole life and he will live with it for the rest of his life.
All right. Coming up after 9 o'clock, we're going to talk about the big Blue Jay news, which is the George Springer, the highly coveted free agent who's been on the market all winter, as most of the free agents have been. A very quiet offseason for Major League Baseball. Has reportedly signed with the Blue Jays. He is to undergo a physical perhaps as soon as today. And after that, the Blue Jays will officially announce the news. But all of the baseball insiders have the news that he has signed the biggest contract in Blue Jay history. 6 years, $150 million. That's $25 million per season. Reportedly, his ask from the start, be it from the Blue Jays, the Mets, and whatever team was interested, was for 5 years and $150 million. He doesn't end up getting that, but he gets the total pay package. At the end of the day, he just has to sign for an extra year, so $150 million. He's a U.S. Northeast kid. He's from Connecticut, so he, you know, for people that that complain sometimes about the weather early season, late season, and you know, it's really not, it's different in Toronto than New York, which is close to Connecticut, but not that different.
No, not at all.
He knows what he's walking into.
Yeah, and God, you're playing in a dome in Toronto. If you've been there, it's a world-class city. So yeah, interesting negotiations though, JR, how something like this could go out that long, where even on those terms that you're talking about, from a Jays perspective, it's a difference of 25 to 30. It's an extra year, you know, how this kind of played out, who else was involved, and still ended up landing a whole lot of dough.
All right, so Hammer, you looked at, do you have the stat now of bangs? Of course, George Springer comes from Houston. The cheating Astros won the 2017 World Series. He was the MVP, and of course, we all know the scandal that involved the banging of the drums when they were at home and the cheating, which turns out to be true. He never got smeared as much as some of the other Astro players, particularly Altuve did. You mentioned Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa bit. Springer, not as much, but you there's a stat about bangs per at. Somebody counted?
There's
trash can
Astros,
bangs per at bat.
An Astros fan, Tony Adams, who watched all 8,200 pitches, home pitches, all righty? Because this is where the bangs happen. The bangs happen at home. And the 1,100 total trash can bangs.
Okay.
And for George Springer, he had 139 bangs on 933 pitches.
Okay.
So about 15% of his pitches that he saw at home, he heard bangs for.
Bangs per at-bat, 15.
Bangs per at-bat.
Yeah. And no road banging? Like
No, because the banging came from the secret camera, which was in the outfield somewhere, correct?
Okay.
That's right.
Right, that's how they...
It was only home banging.
Right, so... Right, so the information goes to somebody who's inside the clubhouse or inside the dugout, and he's the guy, the banging... is happening in the clubhouse. Yeah. That's where the bang happens. Okay.
Well, where else? What?
Well, that sounds like the old Mets team in the 80s, actually.
Exactly. Many teams.
What were his home and road stats, Hammer? Is there a big difference?
I don't have the splits for that.
Because that's a big deal, is it not, right? I mean, that's where you're going to get an idea of. Because wasn't that for Altuve? Wasn't he just a monster at home, especially in the playoffs?
I think they were all. Well, and most, listen, most players
are,
right?
That's the trend as well,
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah, but
okay.
I don't know.
Better at home.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to look at the difference in
but
the
I mean,
two,
he had good years after 2017 as well. I mean, he had a great year in 2019 batting 292 with the 39 dingers and the 96 RBI. I mean, he has had good seasons. You're going to benefit from knowing what pitch is coming, but he's also just plainly a really good hitter as well.
Yeah.
And good outfielder, kind of fills a hole in center field. So, you know, checks a lot of boxes as far as the Blue Jays
speed, leadoff, you can put him anywhere in the lineup that you want. Obviously, top half. And but he's just a perfect player for the Blue Jays.
This is my baseball expertise, guys. I am correct in saying the Astros are now in the American League, right? Is that right? Because I grew up on NL West. Mm-hmm. The Astros were always there.
Yeah.
My point is he's been to Toronto a bunch of times, right? As I said, he's a New York kid. You know exactly what it's all about and what a beautiful spot it is.
Yeah. Carp writes, so excited for this Blue Jay season. Look at this. My two teams are setting up to be very good for years to come. That comes from Carp. I'm assuming he's talking about the Sens as well. Yeah. And the Blue Jays have put them as critical as people have been of Shadkins, Shapiro and Adkins. They tore it right down.
Are they the same person? Is this what we're, because they don't speak together, we never see them in the same room.
Yeah. Hence the name Shadkins.
Shadkins.
Yes, exactly.
Are you guys starting to have more faith in them, though? Because I'm assuming that these pretty good Indians teams that we've seen over the last few years, they were a major part of building, were they not? Before they came
and
to Toronto?
And it's been kind of the same formula.
Yeah.
It's sort of followed the same formula. Now, you know, listen, full credit, and I think some of the drafts predated them coming to Toronto, some of these guys that are now turning out to be good young players. You also got to choose which of the good young players to keep, right?
Yeah.
You don't trade the wrong guys, which is often what we see in rebuilds as well. Having Guerrero, Biggio, and Bichette as kind of a core of, you know, young guys who very much look like they're going to be great Major League Baseball players.
Yeah.
And right now you have to pay them essentially pennies on the dollar for what they're giving you. That enables you to go out and spend $150 million on George Springer right now. So you have to pay, you don't have to pay these guys more than peanuts the way that, the baseball arbitration system works.
Yeah, and the way the team's setting up, we'll be back to a full barn. And if for a year where you don't have to have or might not have fans, JR, then you look forward to it. I just said to Hammer, maybe it's a bit of a light going off because there's nothing better than going down to Toronto or Montreal in the summertime. But a few years ago, it was so cool to see a Jays game. Hadn't even thought of it. And the minute you see news like this and you guys start talking about a young team, you start thinking, boy, this, once again, is one of those things in the summertime you want to hop down to Toronto and grab a Jays game.
All right, this text comes in. Read the Sens last night. The young guys were great last night. Mistakes, yeah, but OMG, the vets made more, and they're not fun to watch. I just don't understand this rebuild. We build a large inventory of prospects by dumping our core and accumulating old guys that other teams don't want, and now we still have to watch old guys we brought in from teams that didn't want them while we sit out prospects. Or lose them on waivers. That comes from Unsigned.
You know what, Unsigned, my thing? Hey, I'd like to see Willanen and White in. Do find it from Stone to Duchesne to DeZingle to Hoffman to all those trades that are moved. You don't have a single asset in the lineup. Now, I know Abramov is hurt. Davidson, we've never identified to actually be a player. Actually, we did. We went down to see him.
Yes.
I would have thought you would have, for guys like that, even Balcers was put on waivers, would have tried to move it along. And I've been part of teams, JR, and you sit in the war room and you kind of sit on your roster and then a call comes for a veteran player. And that Fast and Furious of the Sens, where it was from Austin Watson, and then I at the end was, on step on as far as the leadership. But this clutter that has now appeared to have come with Anisimov being a leftover, where we thought he'd be, Bodker up in the press box. Mm-hmm. Then Paquette comes in. Then Coburn comes in. What started as a very active offseason and made a lot of sense. Branson's been fine to Brown. Now has just created a lot of clutter, and at least in those particular cases, has just made for a roadblock for a couple of young guys that are on one-way contracts. And are, first of all, Colin White, would you agree, is an NHL player? Like, he's not, have any doubt that he's an NHL player. The guy's not even dressing. And as far as Willanen at 25 on a one-way contract, like, okay, maybe he struggled on it. He hasn't played forever. If that's what you're going to use for your young players, and that's one thing I hate about Guy Boucher, you make a mistake and he would bench you. Like, come on, man, this is part of the process. You learn from it, and then you go from there. You do that via experience. And this is a season where you can provide a lot of young players with experience, JR, that maybe next year you can't, because there is pressure from your owner next year to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I and I'm going to refer to this kind of going forward, that this is a free pass season.
Big
for
time,
coach
big
and
time.
Management. There are zero expectations from fans this season to win games. Would they like to win games? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Would they like the Sens to make the playoffs when everybody predicted them for last? Yeah, sure. But if it doesn't happen, there's going to be zero disappointment in this market at the end of the season if the Ottawa Senators don't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And there'll be disappointment if they don't make the playoffs and they end up playing a lineup like they iced last night.
Yeah.
Then there'll be disappointment. What people want to see right now are the young players. And if the young players make mistakes that result in losses, people don't care. Let's find out if some of these guys can play or not. Because as you said, this year, it looks like probably for the entire season, there won't be any fans at games.
No,
so there is... There is should be zero pressure from management, from ownership, I should say, from ownership to, God, got to get the vets in there. We got to try and win some games, man.
Yeah.
It's because, winning sells tickets and we can squeeze out a little more money. That pressure does not exist this year. This is a very rare year as a management team and as a coaching staff where you don't face pressure to win games.
Yeah.
And if that pressure is not there, then I don't know why you would default to putting out players, for putting in players like Artie Anisimov to begin with, let alone putting him out in 3-on-3 overtime.
Yeah, and also to that, I'd be more disappointed, JR, if you accumulate some points this year playing veteran players, because for the most part, to me, if you get a save last night, you win the hockey game, and I would still have an issue with kind of the process. This is also, and if you're normally selling tickets, and if you're Anthony LeBlanc trying to rebuild your business side, like, what more do you need than last night? Like, even in the loss, most of your focus would have been on, man, that top line. They're showing Stutzel in the stands. This guy's already a freaking rock star after the World Junior. He's been the TSN play from the World Junior. Now they've got his goal. Like, I got some pieces in place here that not only are going to be stud players, but the marketing ability ability and then immerse in a few more young people and everybody just starts to get really excited. And again, this isn't dressing 18 players under 25 and expecting, this is just what would seem to me. And this is where I would take it a step further. Like, I'm a little bit shocked from an ownership standpoint for somebody that is really involved in this. Isn't asking some serious questions like that. That would be the part that blows my mind away, is that Pierre Dorion hasn't gotten a call from Eugene Melnyk saying, hey, let's be honest here. Like, why? Please go through the process here as to why these two players are sitting out, especially a guy that you gave a 6-year contract at $4.8 million per. And I've got a 34-year-old guy not only playing, but your coach actually puts him out in overtime and we lose a hockey game.
Yeah. Are we getting, could we be fairly accused of getting ahead of ourselves right now on, you know, we're only 3 games into the season. The counter argument will be from some, and maybe just from the team itself. Hey, come on, guys, early days. We played 33 games now. This is not the entire season we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely, JR, but 10 months into a pandemic and the way my life and the way I feel right now, all bets are off.
It's Overreaction Wednesday.
No, I agree with you, you know, but, you know,
is it fair criticism?
Oh, I don't know if it's, there's no reason to criticize because we don't even know what the plan is. I'm just speaking to someone that worked in the NHL for 20 years, what I would deem to be the obvious. Okay, opening night. I think a message was sent flat out. I watched the game on Saturday and I watched the game last night. Colin White's a better player than Artem Anisimov. So, okay, there you go. There, let's move ahead. I'm just stating obvious. But to that point, where they're at the trade deadline to the end of next year to next fall, you know, that's what really matters. But I just find it perplexing as a person that has quite a bit of experience in management.
Yeah. Coaches and DJ Smith has been a coach for a long time, right? They first of all, they hate losing, right? I mean, coaches have in their minds, they are all about today, right? Because if you lose too much as a coach, you're going to get fired. You know that. So coaches have a very kind of a short sight line on kind of where they're at. Managers are supposed to have a longer sort of a lens. They're looking at things in a bigger picture. There should be no reason, in my opinion, for DJ Smith to be concerned about his job, where he is like, I got a coach here to win every single game. Do you want to win? Would you like to win? Are you wired to win? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there should be no default mechanism to, I got to put in old guys because old guys give me a better chance to win.
I agree,
That should not be something that crosses his mind whatsoever.
No. And as I said, and even him coming in, you know, he's been very clear about it and saying, hey, it is about the younger players. Organizationally, last year, they were incredible. Guys in Belleville, Formanton, Norris to Batherson, you know, the overall process of what was happening, I just guess behind the scenes philosophically, and he'd have to use the 4 years in Toronto. Like, what was the blueprint? You know, part of that, and they did a nice job at developing their core, but the issue they ran into with Mike Babcock was the veteran players. And that, after a while, management just said, listen, we're going to start getting rid of these guys. So, I don't think it would be that. But again, I would also say, like, okay, if you were deciding right now between Connor Brown, I'll use an example, or there's a good young player and it's very close, would I understand the playing of Connor Brown or somebody else? Like, again, I put Artie Anisimov right in the spot I put Bodker a year ago, Jer. This is of no use to me. This is a player that probably will retire after the year. So then I get into that discussion of why. Like other decisions, you know, once in a while you have a good player. But in this particular case, and even on a guy like Coburn, who was a paper transaction to get a second-round pick, why he's chewing up any ice time for a guy like Willan? And that's the part that I get into. Hey, I understand sometimes you have good veteran players. You know, for Mike Babcock, he wanted to pay Patrick Marleau, and there's other players, or even Ron Hainsey. You could kind of see a fit at the time, and then management finally said, you know what, enough is enough. We've got to move these guys along.
So on Anisimov, because it's maybe more symbolic than anything, are either of these two things a plausible explanation as to why he's playing and when he is playing, why he's being even put out in overtime? A, it's a reward for a player, we are told, that came into camp. There were, you know, low expectations for him. It was going to be, you know, everybody thought coming in, well, he's 34 years old.
Yeah.
He's not going to play. He came into camp by all accounts in great shape and has had a good camp. So, that you're looking to send a signal, I guess, to the rest of your team that, you know, we aren't predisposed to think of players in any way. You're already an Anisimov, 34 years old, you did the work in the offseason, you need to be rewarded, and that's a signal to other players, younger players on the team.
Yeah.
You know what? This is how we want it. So there's that. Or B, we're playing the crap out of this guy because we're trying to get some trade value. for this guy at the trade. Are either of those plausible?
Well, B isn't, because I don't think there would be much interest other than maybe a seventh round pick. So I'll say no. Now, as far as the fitness part of it, yeah, I'm a big, you know, a big booster of that. But then you would have to, and again, from what we've been told, if Colin White was a year ago and he wasn't in great shape and he rolls in all day long, Jer, I got no problem with it. We're a young guy, you know what? You're just not ready to play. You didn't put the work in. You know, we were told that he came here and he's worked his butt off. He's done a great job. So that's the part that I don't understand. But to your logic, yeah, if the veteran guy came in, the young guy's like, oh, man, he's got all this money and he's not putting in the work. And same thing on Willannon. But by all accounts, both young players are mature, have prepared very well, at least from what we've been told. But to your logic, it would have to be that one did and one didn't. Do you know what I mean? If they both did it, then no, I don't need to be rewarding that. Because as I said, this player doesn't play any part of our future at all.
Yeah. Anyway, I hate to, we're kind of overemphasizing. I mean, that's the talking point. They end up losing the game, right? Yeah. If they end up winning that game in overtime, are we having this conversation? If somehow Anisimov even plays that shift in overtime, they get through it and they come back and win in overtime. Yeah. Are we having as much as a debate, or are we overemphasizing it because of the result?
No, I think it's a result. But I also, again, my biggest checkpoint was watching Friday, Saturday to Tuesday, was just trying to figure out, okay, what's the difference here? And like I said, I'll argue that Colin White might be your second fastest center right now, ahead of Stepan, ahead of Tourney, ahead of Artie. So as far as my eye test, JR, I just think he's a better player. But as far as the part of it, yeah, I mean, it's magnified because also you watch a game like last night and you're just nothing but impressed. And you're watching that young line. And yeah, no, of course, I think it's magnified based on that.
Yeah. Is Colin White potentially, Pierre brought up the point of, hey, Dadonov was brought in as a goal scorer. Right now, he's not scoring goals. Oh, I did think he was more noticeable last night.
Yeah.
Is Colin White maybe, you know, because you said, look, maybe there's just not an option right now. There's nobody at center right now that fits with that guy. Is maybe Colin White, if you look at it, maybe the one guy that potentially could be a fit?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I would assume that Tierney, based on the points, where Colin White, I thought he actually needed people to feed him the puck even when he's at the World Junior, but certainly when he was with Stone and Tkachuk. So, no, I don't think you're setting the table. And the fallback for a coach, which I can relate to, I would look at this and think on paper, if you don't want to play Stutz in the middle, I'd put Galchenyuk there. But certainly his habits in the past and his lack of attention to detail and playing defense, I might worry about. But on paper, you know, that would be my obvious that those three would be playing together.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about Timmy Stutz. It's funny, he disappears from the lineup for one game, and I'm sort of not thinking it through and thinking, okay, if he's back for, let's say, even the game tomorrow night, right?
Yeah,
even though there is a reluctance right now to play him in the middle, they said to start the season he's going to be a winger, and I'm not thinking they're changing their mind two games into his NHL career. Maybe they change their opinion a little further down the road. But that being said, we saw at the World Juniors, the limited time we've seen him, this guy can drive play as a winger, right?
Yeah.
We see like the Patrick Kanes of the world. You don't have to be necessarily we're predisposed to think that, you know, center ice, those are the guys that drive the play.
Yeah, for sure.
The elite level wingers can also drive play. Patrick Kane is the best example. If we thought about all the comparables to Timmy Stützle leading up to the draft, hey, what player does he remind you of? What's the name that came up the most? Patrick Kane is the name that came up the most.
Yeah, for sure.
He drives play on any line he's with Chicago Blackhawks. So if you're looking for maybe the natural fit with a Dadonov to get him going and scoring some goals, maybe it's as simple as just putting him back on a line with Stützle.
Yeah, for sure. And recognizing to that point, JR, like, hey, here's a 19-year-old new in the league. Here's Stepan, who's in quarantine, has come across to a new team. Here's Dadonov soon on a new team. That part you also just respect is that, hey, you need a lot of reps and chemistry in a short training camp with no exhibition games. So the patience part of it and everybody getting comfortable, I get that, you know. And now you watch an improved power play, first and second unit, you see the first line. But as far as the rest of that, no, I mean, and think about that. I mean, Norris and Batherson, and even a little bit with Tkachuk and Norris knowing each other, the reps between those three are far greater than the rest of the lineup. And then probably from a chemistry standpoint, that makes sense, you know, Tierney with Paul and Brown, you know, to me, the more they play, the better they're going to get, and probably be one of those prototypical third lines that can end up generating a little offense for you.
So here's what the changes I would make for the game tomorrow night. I would put Hogberg in for Murray. I think Hogberg, you know, based on his play last year, deserves to get in for a game.
For sure.
I would put Willannon in for Coburn, And I would take out Anisimov and Paquette, and I would put in White and, well, I'm hopeful that Stützle can play tomorrow.
Ready to go.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah,
Four lineup changes, yeah, I think, yeah. And there you go. They win 7-0.
Yeah, and they're exactly. Well, hey, I mean, this would be when you watch a game.
7-0.
You're looking at that Winnipeg team without Liney, which, again, now you want to talk about a winger that drives play. Well, he's on a short list as well. But you think, hey, I got an opportunity against this club. And Coburn, and there's been talk about a no doubt, I'm sure, good pro mentoring a guy like Josh Brown. I get that part of it, too. But for Josh Brown right now, there's only so much mentoring you can do as a pairing when you have two big bodies there that aren't the most mobile people. What you need, again, is someone with Josh Brown like Willannon, who's a puck mover. And if you want to leave Riley with Gabranson or Zaitsev, and then to me, I think you see a bit of a foundation on the back end of what would work as partners as well.
All right, your thoughts on anything that was discussed there. Keep the text coming at 12-1200. You can tweet at us at TSN 1200. We'll get more into the discussion next hour. We're going to talk about George Springer as well, the reported new Blue Jay free agent acquisition. Our TSN 1200 tool and equipment store web poll question for you today. The Blue Jay signing George Springer makes them A, an AL East contender, B, an ALCS contender, C, a World Series contender. How big a deal is the Blue Jay signing George Springer within the context of the team as it exists right now? Let us know what you think at TSN 1200. .ca. A little bit of breaking NFL news as well. And this is not official, but lots of reports from some reputable sources like Adam Schefter that Philip Rivers is going to retire as a quarterback. Of course, spent this past season in Indianapolis, led the Colts to the playoffs, but very much seemed like his post-loss news conference was a pretty good indication that guy had played his last game, and it now appears that to be the case. So Philip Rivers retiring, and of course, we think that Drew Brees is going to do the same as well. We're talking about two old legends back from their San Diego Charger days, when you think back, but two great veteran quarterbacks looking like they're going to call it a career. All right, we'll take a break. 9 o'clock on the dot. We'll get you the latest news from 580 CFRA. Run down all the details on a busy NHL night, including more on the Sens 4-3 overtime loss to the Jets. And when we return, we're going to talk more Blue Jay baseball and the signing of George Springer. What's it all mean? And what does it mean for the Blue Jays? Are they indeed as much as a World Series contender now with Springer? We'll get the thoughts of Keegan Matheson. He covers the team for MLB.com. Regular guest here on TSN 1200. He will join us in the show coming up right here on TSN 1200.